Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel.
Today we have two site founders
as guests. One is my boss, Jason McIntyre, editor-in-chief of The Big Lead. And the other is Kyle Scott, who founded Crossing Broad. We're going to be talking about all of the media Armageddon, especially with digital sports writers in the past few months. Yesterday, Vice Sports... They are very specific. Their publicist saying that they didn't shutter, but they fired all of their writers except for maybe one or two of them, and they're going to be doing more video. This follows a few months in which Fox Sports pivoted to video. ESPN, Yahoo, SI laid off a bunch of writers. MTV News laid off all of their old writers, many of whom came from Grantland. They're going more video heavy. Kyle, you do mostly writing on your site now. Do you find that advertisers are trying to push you more towards multimedia, or are you still finding a way to make a buck with the written word?
Yeah, it's a good question. First off, thanks for having me. Secondly, I'm constantly paranoid about the business model, and I've been doing the site for 7+ years now, so that's always been the case. But I've found that in the last year, I rely a lot on whether it's ad networks or affiliate things that are a little bit more hands-off than direct sales. We kind of pick and choose our spots for direct sales because a lot of it does wind up falling on my shoulders. So a lot of our sales are on a local level where, you know, people want events and stuff. But I have heard a lot more lately from people, hey, what are you doing with podcasting? What are you doing with video? What are you doing on social and that sort of thing? And from my standpoint right now, the money is still driven from the website, which is mostly written word, but I am hyper paranoid about not staying in that box for too long and figuring out ways to, automate. The problem with the video ads is it's kind of tough to automate. You know, the networks that are there for the written word aren't quite there for video unless you're at a certain level. So that's kind of my thing right now, is figuring out like the best way to monetize non-written word, which is the paranoia for everybody in the business.
Jason, what's been your biggest takeaway with all of the recent developments?
Yeah, it's super depressing, is it not? I mean, it sounds like the independent, smaller voices are getting squeezed out. And, you know, and Ryan, we saw this on our level, is that, you know, 6-7 years ago, the blogs kind of owned the space of, oh, look, this is happening on social, let's make a blog post about it, or this is blog worthy. But now here we are, 2017, and, you know, the Washington Post is doing that same item. And the New York Times is writing about, you know, essentially blog posts. So all that stuff is being squeezed out of the independent small voices, and the big guys with their, you know, big money that they've invested into Facebook, and that, you know, they're obviously dominating the SEO. It's increasingly difficult for the small independent guy. And this is not all that different from, you know, big box stores. They're squeezing out the little guy, and then guess what? Amazon's squeezing out those guys. You see malls all around the country are empty because of how Amazon's dominating the market. And like the trickle down to media is getting ugly. I don't know where the end game is here. Or, you know, in 5 years, Ryan, is your guess that we're going to have like a couple of really large entities and then maybe tiny local sites? Like, Kyle, your site's killing it. Maybe you're the voice of Philadelphia, and all the other small Philly blogs have kind of been squeezed out in 5 years.
Yeah, that's always kind of been my model, is trying to do something different. I think you touched on a really good point about the more mainstream guys doing the things we used to do. I always tell people, I give them the example, and you probably remember this, way back when a fan, like 2010, ran on the field at a Phillies game and got tased. And that was the most, one of the more bloggable stories you will ever find. And back in 2010, there was a handful of local blogs, me, the Fightins, the 700 level here in Philly, and then you guys on a national level and one or two others that would cover that in real time. Everything else was, all the mainstream people were still in a more linear newspaper TV mindset. So there wasn't that much competition. When that thing happens now, every single outlet, local, national, whatever, has teams of 20-something content producers who are churning that out instantly, so it is almost impossible to compete with. So I've, on a local level, tried to differentiate myself by just having a unique take on things. You're never going to be first on something, so it's like, what can I give people to have personality in this, where they feel like even if they know the story, they want to hear my view? And I think that is the one way you could still differentiate yourself. But again, it's getting harder to do with the written word, and you know, you got to find those other outlets.
There, some of these sites, like Vocative and Vice Sports, they really tried to go hard on original reporting and long form. And I don't want to disparage their work. They did a lot of things that were very interesting that weren't being done a lot of other places. But I think the three of us could look at those sites philosophically and being like, you guys are giving us, this analogy Jason loves to use, you guys are giving us too much vegetables and not enough junk food. I don't know if this is sustainable. And so on some level, this should be a wake-up call to organizations that if they're that long-form and original reporting, no matter how good and how incisive, it's not going to pay for itself. Jason, do you think, though, that like there's going to be a model where nobody at an institution is going to want to sponsor this, and it's going to have to all be driven by subscription revenue?
That's a pretty scary thought. I keep going back, and remember, we wrote about this on the site, Ryan. It was maybe like 2013, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette went deep into, I believe it was concussions, and they did like a 4-part series, one of those pieces that would usually win an award. But what they did was they buried some awesome fact about, like, I don't know, I'm just going to throw a player's name out there, Hines Ward or someone, who was talking about concussions and major issues that he had had. And it was like the greatest nugget, but they just buried it in the story. Well, the Washington Post sees that, and whoever the player was, they just pulled that, made it a headline, and they got on the track. And there it is, Antoine Randall L. They put that in a headline. That got the pickup with us, Pro Football Talk, everywhere. Everybody's talking about that nugget, and nobody's talking about or clicking on this massive series, this huge undertaking they invested all this time and money into. And it's like, that's what's happening. Like, you can do all the long form you want. If there's a kernel, just a tiny piece that can be turned into a headline, people are going to pull that out, and they're all going to aggregate it. So what good, you know, and this is going to sound bad, but that's kind of where we are. It's happening at the national level with political news. You can't bury that. You got to run with that as the lead in the headline, no matter how awesome your piece is, whether it's 5,000 words, 2,500 words, you got to go with kind of the newsy thing that's going to get pickup. And as scary as it is, like, that's kind of where we are. Like, I don't like it, but that's kind of how it is. You know, with Facebook, hey, man, you get that post on Facebook first, and you get the link in the Facebook trending box or whatever it is, and you get the tsunami of traffic, and everybody else gets a little drizzle, you know, and everybody else. And it's almost an arms race that way, because guess what? If you've got 10 guys that you can hire to just pull these blog items and churn them out and turn the little kernels into big mushrooms that everybody clicks on, great. And if you don't, then you're screwed. And the small guy, once again, it feels like it's getting kind of screwed.
But the big people have been affected too. SI has been laying people. They've had a series of layoffs every 6 months for years now. Yahoo lays off a bunch of their original bloggers. ESPN punts on hockey, baseball, and college sports coverage. It's not just the little people that are getting squeezed out. Kyle, how do you think, just going back to the money aspect, How can you make money up of original reporting?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think a lot's being made now of the New York Times and the Washington Post and what they're doing, you know, with the president, and it's driven subscriptions. But I think that, and that is working for them, but that is such a unique example. This is maybe a once in a generation sort of event where people really are valuing and want to put their money where their mouth is for reporting to support that stuff. That, I think, is the exception to the rule. And even then, like you said, Jason, they're not doing these big long expose pieces. They're rolling out little nuggets almost seemingly every day at 5 o'clock. There's a new relatively short story with just like the latest drip of news. It's really tough though. You know, you talked about like junk food. You know, junk food has supported media forever. People love to roll their eyes at the internet about memes and cat memes and all the, you know, standard things people will say about bloggers. But the reality is that is how TV networks and newspapers have been monetized for years. You know, people read the the comics and the movie section and the classified ads for years supported the long form journalism being done in the paper. Sitcoms and reality shows and cartoons or, you know, what have you supported and cheesy dramas in the evening supported the evening news. So that's always been the case. And I feel like there are some places when you look at a Vice, like, yeah, they're doing great work. And there are sites like The Outline are doing some really interesting things now. But I think people are hesitant on the internet to realize that you have to have the junk food to pay for the really good stuff. So I think that created the problem for some of those big, super serious guys. But, you know, I don't know what the, you know, as far as like the national sites, everyone's trying to figure it out. But obviously places like ESPN have decided that really good reporting like Jason Stark, that even with all their other things to support it, it's still not worth the expense for those guys. And that to me is the scariest part.
Yeah, right. That's a great point, Kyle. Hold on, Ryan. About the TV, this also happens in movies, okay? Everybody does the tentpole blockbusters that bring in hundreds of millions of dollars. And on the side, they'll take a chance on like 5 artsy films that are low budget, but those are going to win the awards, the prestige films. They're going to get you the Oscar nominations. Whereas, you know, Spider-Man 17 or whatever isn't, but it's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars. And Ryan, you know, to your point about ESPN losing people, that's because their TV product is hurting, right? They're losing subscriptions on the cable end. They're all of a sudden hemorrhaging money. And when you could fund the Grantland while losing 8 to 10 million a year or whatever number Bill Simmons wants to claim it was, you know, you can't really swallow it as badly when the TV money's also shrinking. And the stock price might be going down. Then it's a factor of, well, wait a sec. Can we all of a sudden just afford to be sinking all this money into 538 and the undefeated? Well, you know, it's been a year or two or three. Let's see what happens. We saw what happened with Grantland. They lose Simmons. All of a sudden, Simmons' lieutenants don't want to stick around. Oh, and it's a money loser? Let's just scrap it.
That's an interesting point to see what's going to happen with 538 and the undefeated, because I think probably most people listening to this listen to the Bill Simmons and Jim Miller and Brian Curtis podcast a couple weeks ago, where Simmons, who has firsthand knowledge of these island sites at ESPN, said off the cuff, there's no way undefeated and 538 are making money. Kyle, if you were like on a different path and you were a writer at one of those sites, do you think you might be concerned about what's going to happen 2 to 3 years down the road there?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it goes back to the thing we just talked about with Vice and stuff. You know, you look at the Ringer or whatever it is, and some of the content, especially regarding the NBA, it's can't miss stuff, and you really want to read it, but then you find out that, hey, traffic isn't so great, they're having trouble getting sponsors and all that stuff. So I would be scared to be any writer. Like I mentioned Jason Stark before, but I consider him one of the best baseball writers of this generation. And for him to not have a place in a company like ESPN, it's not costing them that much. He's not costing them Bill Simmons money. To see guys like that struggle to land somewhere, it's a real problem. Yeah, I look, you know, because I'm in Philly, I'm certainly more up to speed on what's going on at a place like Comcast Sportsnet, and they're doing something similar in the TV realm, which is probably smart, but they're getting rid of the people who are their traditional TV people, and they're doubling down on people who can do everything. So they don't want just writers, they don't want just hosts, they want people who can host their sports night show, who can appear as a content expert, not just a host, but as an analyst on post-game and debate shows, and then can also write web content. And you're finding that people who are very one-dimensional are being left out in the cold right now. And I feel like eventually we'll have like the tide will pull back on that a little bit, because you're realizing some of those people who are one-dimensional, especially in writing, they are the experts in this stuff. And there are a few people in a few markets and niches who can command an audience and maybe their own subscriber fee. You know, if they start a Patreon or just put a blog behind a paywall, enough to give them an income. But for the most part, you're seeing people who are very good in one area getting cut off. And I think that is a problem, because you're bringing everything to the surface and you're getting rid of the experts. So to answer your question, I would be pretty scared if I was an in-depth writer on a particular subject.
Hold on, Ryan. Geez. That's a great point. Ryan, let me ask Kyle something. That's a phenomenal point. But here's my question, Kyle, on that. Right? So if you're, like you said, a singular guy, let's say you're just a guy who goes up and tries to hit home runs at the plate. You're not a spray hitter. You can't hit the slider. You can't hit the curve, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think the move, if you're a young writer, is to say, hey, man, I need to spread my wings. I want to be able to do podcasts. I better be able to go on a radio show or host a show. I need to get my TV chops up. Like, you said the word expert. I wonder, do you think expert plays better on TV, or do you think, like, interesting and creative and like, you know, just interesting plays better than expert?
No, I mean, I definitely think entertaining TV, you know, and you know this now because you're doing a lot of TV, like entertainment, TV is a different medium, so that you can, there's only so much of an expertise that can kind of hold an audience, especially an audience that might be viewing sports TV where it's a little more passive, it's in a bar, it's, you know, late at night, it's background noise for some people. You have to be entertaining to get those people. And yeah, I totally agree. I think the bar for, it's not so much, I think young writers who are coming up really get this. It's more people who have been in the business for 10 plus years who really have this wealth of experience and knowledge and are really good at what they do, but they do one thing. And maybe they don't think they'd be good on TV, or they don't think they'd be great at podcasting. I think you find there are certain people who may not come across well speaking audio, but their content is so good that people are willing to put up with their you know, lack of entertainment, for lack of a better word, because what they're bringing them is so unique. But again, it's a question of who's going to pay you to do that, and can you go out and get your own audience? And I think that, you know, it's a lot of moving parts in that question, I guess.
So one of the issues going back to Simmons that he had with ESPN was he was really early into the podcast realm, and they were not aggressive in selling podcast ads, and they're still not. They might have ads at the beginning of podcasts, but they don't have a lot of mid-roll ads or things of that nature. There aren't too many individual pods at ESPN that have their own presenting sponsor. And you can see why that makes sense from a broader perspective at ESPN, given that they like pay $100 million per Monday Night Football game, and they're trying to sell that many ads on it, and the whole podcast industry might only be a $150 million ad industry. But on a micro level, that's how you get your digital people to be not just paying for themselves, but to be profitable. And they don't have, for a while, they weren't set up to have departments that could capitalize on someone like Simmons, who has a big individual social following. Jason, do you think that some of these big companies like Fox, ESPN, even a USA Today are going to catch up in terms of selling micro-level ads for some of these multimedia digital properties? Or are we going to be stuck relying on a page view model and display ads for the foreseeable future?
That's a tough one. And I can only really speak to the USA Today experience. I haven't had a podcast at Fox, but it seems to me like it's going to be an independent thing. Like, right, you start a podcast, and if the big company can't monetize it, you go out on your own and hustle and get it sponsored, right? Revenue streams, I think, are going to be the key. If you're a writer, right, you make a little money blogging, maybe you work out a deal with the radio station. Hey, man, I can give you 3 days a week, 10 solid minutes. It's cost me a couple $100. Oh, and then on the side, I'm going to start a podcast, and I'm going to hustle. I'm going to go to some local outlets or, you know, some national ones. Maybe I got a connection here or there. Toss me a couple bucks. You got another revenue stream there for advertising. And you just cobble together a bunch of things, and eventually at some point you're cobbling it together a lot, and we've seen this with Clay Travis over at Outkick the Coverage. You hustle, you get enough of a base, and you're making a pretty good living for yourself. I think the days of, as Kyle said earlier, you know, being like a specialist, hey man, I'm a TV guy, that's over. You got to try to make money as many different ways as possible. And I know this is going to sound cliche, but the grind is real. This idea of, oh, I'm just going to do two podcasts a week and that's going to be all my rep. Like, come on. Like, there's just such an appetite for information. I know there's a lot of content. You've got to get yours to cut through. And if you can get multiple revenue streams, I think that's the answer.
Kyle, you've got several different revenue streams there. You've got sponsorships with DraftKings, HelloFresh. Another thing you do is you've got these surveys on your site that, in my experience, are a little bit aggravating, but I understand that you're an independent, hustling entrepreneur, and you've got to do what you can to make money from those. Without being, like, too specific, how much of your revenue comes from those surveys?
It's interesting because it's a constantly, you know, what is my number one source of income this month or this quarter will, you know, be different next and so on. The surveys are really interesting because for about 4 years I was using these ones from Google, and they were not super invasive. They were Google's, was born out of Google, where they give their employees like 20% of their time to tinker, and it was born as a side project, and it was an answer to a paywall, understanding that readers didn't want to pay for content, but they would be willing to trade a few seconds of their time to answer a market research question. And then Google, you know, got a little bit for providing that question, and they threw some money the publisher's way. For about 3 years, those absolutely killed it for me because there were just a handful of questions, like 2 to 5 questions. And with a consistent audience like I had, readers were familiar with it. Honestly, our traffic grew 50% over that time, so it wasn't turning people away, and it was a substantial portion of the income. By far, our number one, if I had to choose one thing that was most important, it would have been that. About 4 months ago, Google, as they usually tend to do, decided to make one small, tiny change in their business model, and they thought, well, hey, we have all these surveys to show people. We don't need to put it on publisher sites. We could put it on our own apps. We could put them on our YouTube videos and all the other properties Google owns, and we'll get both sides of that equation, and we could cut out people like me. So I have since switched to a different provider, and that experience, I would agree with you, is more aggravating. It's not as clean as what Google does, and I'm trying my hardest to get away from it. But it's hard because when you have a big company like Google that controls so much, and one little change they make can throw you off course, you have to kind of scramble to plug those leaks. And that's what I'm trying to do now. But any given month, my revenue streams will change. The fourth quarter, a lot, our apparel does really well. We killed it last year with Trust the Process stuff around the Sixers. So that's less consistent, however. So I kind of rely on ad networks as a baseline. And then depending on the time of year, there are other things on top of that that kind of will spike the meter.
Jason, if the big lead were independent today, how do you think you'd be trying to make money from it?
That's a good question. Well, clearly the apparel stuff works. I mean, Kyle sounds like, you know, I know I actually have a couple of the Eagles t-shirts with the bird on it that I love. I got them for my kids as well. But I know Clay Travis does well with the Outkick apparel. I guess Barstool's heavy into the apparel. Like, that's where money can be made because people want, you know, t-shirts from, you know, quasi-cool blog sites that are kind of independent and on the rise. I've never dealt with any apparel on the Big Lead. It's so funny. The Big Lead has been around for so long that the apparel wasn't even like a thing when we started in 2006. Like, people weren't really buying things. People weren't wearing, like, clothes from sports blogs in 2006. I mean, then again, Facebook and Twitter wasn't, like, a thing for sports blogs in 2006 and 7. I mean, YouTube, I believe, it just started. So we just were not around at the beginning of the apparel thing and never really got into it. But, I think that would probably be the number one spot. And then after that, you know, is difficult. I think the podcasts are clearly an option. And Periscope as well. Although I'm not sure, is Periscope doing a lot of advertising? Or are they still trying to stay clean so that it's a great user experience?
They're going to start giving their bigger Periscopers a cut of the action, but I don't believe that that's begun yet. Quay will be an interesting authority on that.
Can I say something real quick on the apparel thing? Real quick. I think whether it's apparel or products, whether you're doing events, whether it's game road trips or whatever, to me, I'm trying to put a lot of effort into that stuff because unlike advertising, where you're really, like we talked about, at the whim of a Google or an ad network or a Facebook or whatever, that is a business that you own. So I kind of look at it as, hey, I have an audience. What can I sell them that I own and I control? If I come out with a good product and can market it to them right, I could also advertise it independent of my website and advertise it on Facebook and Google and get traditional promotion for it. That to me is more comforting if you have a product that you own, whether it's events, apparel, whatever, ticket sales, because now you're not at the whims of the media industry, which seems like it increasingly changes its mind, you know, every 6 months now. So to me, that is kind of where it's at. It's like getting an audience and forget about relying on ads as much as you can, like sell them something that you own and control.
What do you think about that, Jason?
Yeah. 100% with him. I'm actually curious, Kyle. Where do you guys hold up on Facebook? Do you feel like that's a potential revenue stream or not really? And also the Twitter videos, because that's kind of a push for us. USA Today really seems to like them. I don't know. Are you guys doing either of those on an independent level?
Yeah, I mean, I want to, and that's where becoming the small guy is really tough, because any one person can start a website and write words and put up pictures and short little videos here and there, and you could pretty much do that as a one-man show. As you know, audio is a little bit harder, you know, there's a little bit more production quality, but you could still do that with one or two people and put together a podcast and post it. Video is the toughest, because it needs to be well edited, it needs to get people's attention, it needs to be well lit and well shot, and you need to look good and all that stuff, and that is hard as one person. So my biggest hurdle right now is on a local level. I want to do those things on a local level. I want to be the outlet locally that is dominating social video. And I'm confident there are ways to monetize that, even if it is just by promoting your own products and trips and apparel and stuff. But it's hard because it's like me and a handful of contributors right now, and the video is tough. And that's the scary thing, I think, for the little guy, is moving to audio and video requires more time, money, and people. And that is tough if you're one or two people.
Kyle, have you gotten into the event business at all?
For the most part, throughout the course of doing this, I've partnered with some local companies on trips and stuff. I have a sales guy working with me now, and we're going to try and branch out into doing more. We did like an NBA draft watch party, but we're going to start trying to do road trips. The Sixers might play in London this year, and we're tossing around that idea because it can be very profitable from what I understand. You want a company to kind of run it on your behalf because there's liability, if nothing else, but it can be very profitable. So I'm trying to dabble into that again, to just kind of get away from constantly relying on just strictly advertisers and ad networks. So yeah, for sure.
Jason, I wanted to switch this pretty abruptly. So there's a lot of these writers who came into profession kind of around the same time you did. They had gotten to a point where they were making 150, 200 grand a year, maybe even more in some cases if they reached one of these like good positions at ESPN. And now all of a sudden there's just not a market to pay them anywhere near that. What is the? Are they going to leave the industry, or what do you think that like the amount of people who are doing this job is just going to decline significantly over the next 3 or 4 years?
That sounds like a negative question, dude. How do I answer this politically? Let me put it this way. So, let's say if you're a writer and you were making 200 at ESPN and they cut your job, and you go to, I don't know, Yahoo or SI or whatever, and they're offering you half that. Well, I mean, obviously you take it, right? If you've got a family and if you've got kids, you definitely need to take it. But what if you're like 25, 26 years old? I think you can branch out and take some chances, right? You don't have the family. You probably don't have kids. You could take some chances, and taking chances, is where you get the big upshot. You know, I was able to quit my job at Us Weekly way back in the day and take a chance on a website. I made like no money for the first few months, like nothing. But I had I had a wife and she had a good job and we didn't have any kids. So it was like, okay, I can really toil away and grind, probably spending, 16 hours a day working, trying to make the website better. And then, you look at the older people who just got laid off from ESPN or what have you. And I don't know, what do? Do you go into PR? You got to do what you got to do to put food on the table, right? Do you go into marketing? I don't know. And then, is the option, hey, maybe I'll go into PR marketing, and this could be good for the Kyles of the world, and then I'm going to freelance. Put opinions on Crossing Broad, or I'll put in a freelance opinion on a Chicago site, and pick up some money there, and that's when you can cobble together, some money with freelance and a full-time job that's not in the field where it works out well. So are the jobs going away? Well, if you're a college football or college basketball writer, I think you definitely need to reassess looking forward, because it's pretty clear that those are two gigs that are not really going to be there in the next 5-10 years. How many people care about college basketball outside of March? It's just the job just isn't there. I mean, Kyle, Dana O'Neill, I know her well. Great writer, produced great content for a while, and, she covered college hoops and college football. And, you get in a tough spot where it's like, geez, what's the appetite for this? And the two that are popping right now, obviously, NFL, NFL stuff's everywhere, and NBA, which is just super hot, and Kyle's going to find out, especially if the Sixers are good. I mean, who knows? He might take on another Sixers writer. So I think you got to look for the opportunities, and I know this kind of goes back to the vegetables, carbohydrates, but listen, maybe you don't love the NFL, but you know what? That's where your bread can be buttered. You got to start to love the NFL,
Kyle, you mentioned patron pages earlier. There's a guy in Philadelphia, Derek Bodner, who is charging like $3 a month for his page. And I think he's gotten up to like 1,500 or 2,000 subscribers. And that's getting to a point where if he doubles that, he's making real money. How much of a market do you think there is for these really highly specialized people who might just cover one thing that there could be thousands of people that are passionate about to pay for it?
Yeah, I think it's really unique. He's got, I actually just linked to something he did today. I think he was up to $2,200 at $3 a pop, so $6,000 a month. He's $70,000 a year doing this on his own after just a few months. So, I mean, he's making a living. He's making more than, certainly writers are in many places. So I think it's definitely doable, but you need to be, that's where you need to be the subject matter expert. People, someone like me and who is more surface level in the types of stories we do and stuff, it's really tough to command that sort of payment because you're not really giving, you're giving people light fare for the most part. He is giving people expertise. I mean, he sent out a 3,000 word email today. I subscribe, because I'm a Sixers fan and just kind of to keep up on what he's doing. He sent out a 3,000 word email about how the Kyrie thing could impact the Sixers and maybe their interest in LeBron, which Jason, I'm with you with, hey, that could be a Sixers landing spot. But you pay for that expertise. So I think it's a possibility for some, but not for everyone. I do think though that writing is a scary place to be right now for all the reasons Jason just cited. But at a certain point, reading words is is a medium that isn't fully going away. A lot of people consume what we do at work, on their phone, in line at the store, or what have you. And those are not things where you can just watch video or listen to audio. Sometimes people actually want to read stuff. And I think the industry is going full scale away from writing right now. And I do feel like over time it will pull back a little bit. Part of the problem is the ad networks and publishers are both responsible for sort of gaming the system and just, you know, crushing at CPM rates for the written word. But I think over time it will come back and people will be like, hey, I have a 9-to-5 job at a computer. I want stuff to read. So there might be a little bit of a pullback there. But I do think for certain people with an expertise, all you need is like 1,000. It's the old 1,000 to 2,000 fans adage. You can make a living if you have that many people. $3 a month is nothing for most people.
I know both of you are pretty busy today. Jason's got family in town. Kyle's headed to the Phillies game with DraftKings. Is there anything we didn't touch on that you wanted to discuss going in, either of you?
I would add that I think, you know, besides apparel, I think gambling could be the next frontier. Ryan, yes. You've written about this on the Big Lead, about how, listen, if gambling sports gambling becomes legal.
I haven't written it yet, but I'm going to.
Oh, geez, I hope I didn't just spoil it. but listen, that's a huge, massive opportunity for A, advertising, and B, and this is the big one, I think, is listen, if you are good at the NFL and you hit on, if you happen to hit on 60%, why don't you put your picks behind a paywall and sell them at a cheap cost, right? Hey, I'm going to put out my picks every week. You give me, you know, either a flat rate for the season, or if you want to do a by the month, I'll give out college football, I'll give out NFL, maybe I'll give out NBA, maybe I'll give out March Madness. I'm not talking about charging people a lot. I'm not claiming you're an expert. I'm just saying people want your picks. They got to pay for them.
To elaborate on what Jason said about gambling, so gambling's going to become legal in the United States in the next 2 or 3 years, it seems like, and this is going to be a big source of business for teams, leagues, and media outlets, because there's going to be a wealth of new businesses who are going to be trying to compete for that market share, and they're going to be advertising all over the place. So as writers, we need to make it to that point when the money starts flowing in. Kyle, is there anything else that's interesting about where we think media is going that we didn't touch on yet?
No, I mean, I really do. I agree with the gambling thing 100%. That's going to be a bit of a gold rush. And I look at a company like a DraftKings, and I'm not here to promote them by any stretch. And I know they do not want the word gambling mentioned in the same podcast as them because of some of the things they've been in the news for. But I look at a company like that, when it becomes legalized, they're going to be the first company, companies like that will be the first company to step forward and say, hey, we got a million credit cards on file and securely and handle millions of dollars in transactions each day. We could do gambling. You know, that's the sort of thing where you're going to see there's a few companies that are very well positioned to capitalize on that right away. And I do think that we'll see a lot of money come into sports, especially with mobile, and you're going to be able to gamble in real time on the next play. That is going to be a whole new frontier, and I think that will actually touch esports, which I know is a totally different, you know, topic in and of itself. But I mean, it seems the chatter surrounding esports has definitely picked up in the last 12 months, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the fantasy and gambling component of esports be like a really big thing. But you know, I don't know how much media that really is.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Jason. This is a good talk. Hopefully we'll do this again sometime soon.
Thank you.
Well, hopefully not on again, but hopefully we'll all talk again.